going, yeah? How you going, yeah? How you going, yeah?
G'day. Nighty from the Cosmic Psychos, and welcome to How You Going, the show where I sit down for a drink and catch up with one of my mates. You'll know my mate in this episode is the guitarist and lead singer for Magic Dirt. Finding their feet at the legendary Barwon Club in Geelong, Magic Dirt were pioneers of gritty Aussie punk rock. They've played with Sonic Youth, Dinosaur Jr., Spiderbait, Powderfinger and Pavement, even sang about them in a song. The soundtrack to Australia is filled with Magic Dirt tracks like Dirty Jeans, Ice and Plastic Loveless Letter. As a solo artist, Adelita has found critical acclaim through the three albums she has made so far. She's become such an icon, such a bloody legend, that she doesn't even need a last name for you to know who I'm talking about. Adelita came up to the farm back in August for a visit. It was a bit chilly, so we parked ourselves in the shed right next to the fire. And seeing as Adelita doesn't drink, we sampled the range of heaps normal beers and had this little catch-up chat. But before we get to that, Cosmic Psycho's new album, I Really Like Beer, is out now. And right this second, as you listen to me crap on, we're on the road coming to a venue near you. Look out Canberra and Sydney, we're coming to you next. Then it's into Brizzy, Maroochydore and the Gold Coast. Plus, we've just announced that we're coming to Europe and the UK in April and May of 2026. We're doing 24 gigs across the UK, the Netherlands, Belgium, France, Spain, Germany, and even popping into Italy. Grazie. For dates and tickets and all that, have a look at cosmicpsychos.com.au and we'll see you there. Anyway. So, mate, how you going?
Hey, good, Ross. So good to see you, mate.
It has been a while.
Yeah, I know. It's so good.
Time to sit down and have a yarn.
I know.
Good trip up?
It was good. Yeah, beautiful bushland, winding roads and gorgeous place you got here.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's all right.
It's beautiful.
Good to get out of the big smoke for a bit.
Yeah, I'm not a city girl. I'm a nature girl, so I feel really good being here. But you were saying, we were reminiscing about the fact that perhaps on the Punk Rock Surf Shop tour that the Psychos and Magic Dirt did together, that we had a stopover here or something?
I was only thinking about that yesterday or this morning or something, and I just got a feeling that we might have just, on the way through, I might have had to feed the chooks or feed a cow or do something. I can't remember, but I think we sort of all swung in for a little bit and might have had a couple of brewskis on the way to somewhere. I just got a feeling we did that. I'm just not sure. I can't quite pinpoint it.
Oh, that tour was one of the best tours we've ever done and one of the most debauched tours. Fucking hell. And always something happening, always some story the next morning, you know.
It was always a funny one too.
Yeah.
Most of it was funny, I think.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember the bad bits.
Actually, do you want to hear, I got Rao to,
yeah.
Do you want to hear Rao's little, doesn't go for too long, so we'll just play it here.
G'day, Ross. G'day, Ad. Yes. The Punk Rock Surf Shop Tour. What a hoot. That was vague memories. I seem to recall that it was summer, it was hot, and the first or second, we had a day off.
Ah, stupid phone. Oh, Face ID. Oh, fuck that. Oh, for fuck's sake. Is it? Oh, this is the shit where you got to keep.
And
hang on.
Drinking.
Wait.
And the first or second, we had a day off, and we all got together on the beach and played beach cricket for hours on end, drinking. And I remember the next day when we all rocked up to soundcheck, we were pink, all sunburnt, looking rather sheepish. I remember one of the bands got in trouble at a motel because somebody pissed in the bin rather than in the toilet. And the very, very last night, I think we all got up on stage, or most of us, and did a version of Wanna Be Your Dog. Adelita was up on your shoulders, Ross. And at some point, there was a full can of beer swinging by your cock ring.
Oh, fuck. Fuck, did I pull that old one out?
Anyway, good times. Talk soon. Bye.
So I have evidence, I have visual evidence of that tour. And there's a great little press release I wrote on this bit of paper as well. So there's you and Dane. There's us on stage. Me fucking maggoted, just destroying equipment. Oh, there's the Burns unit. We called it after that game of beach cricket where we all got sunburnt. Oh. We didn't know. And we were playing in Byron, I think, or something like that.
That was it.
We called ourselves the Burns unit. You know, emergency department burnt. Like
I reckon the next night in Coffs Harbour was we got in trouble at the motel. And I remember lying, hearing this bloke trying to kick everyone out because we were making too much noise. I think we were playing Queens of the Stone Age really loud. And I couldn't move. I was on my bed, just frozen with sunburn. I could not even bend an elbow. But I remember all the commotion going, fuck, I hope we don't get kicked out because I can't walk. And I'm just lying there in my jocks going, I'll have to be carried out.
I know. We were all just completely like, paralysed from that sunburn. Oh. Oh, my God. And then this is one of my favourite photos of you and me. That looks like that was the one to be your dog number.
Unreal.
Yeah, and I've got a ciggy in my mouth. And I just adored you. Everyone did. Like, I was like, oh, Ross, he's like our papa and our, like, punk rock king. And you were just so nice. Like, everyone was so nice in the band. But, you know, you've got this warmth and you're just yourself and you're authentic. Anyway, we just loved you. And then I wrote a press release. Sorry, I'm taking over here. But
no,
I wrote a press release. If you want your scoop of psycho dirt, then cruise on into the punk rock surf shop nearest you. Blah, 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 blah. Greatest bands and they'll be fucking rocking around Oz in January. And then I write, there's the cosmic psychos who are, as NME tagged them, the granddaddies of grunge. And Magic Dirt, who have proven over and over you don't have to kiss corporate ass to be a successful band. If Scar doesn't float your boat and if you thought you left your keyboard in the 80s, if ecstasy has boiled your brain and you're not pretty fly for a white guy, then get ready for a face full of pure distilled Aussie punk rock. I wrote that
fun times they were. It was
such a great combination.
Oh,
because you know you guys sort of had been touring around for quite a while, and you were quite established, and we were sort of still, sort of not starting out, but we were.
Oh yeah.
Well, we'd sort of done a bit, but it was just really nice. I don't know who even said the Psychos and the Dirt should tour. I don't even know how that idea came about, and it was like it instantly we knew it would work. You know. And it was always good seeing you guys at, like, a big day out or, you know, all the festivals we've done together.
Yeah.
You know. Mate, it's just I remember supporting you, like, when I solo, because I've got my solo thing, and you invited me to support you at the Theatre Royal in Castlemaine not that long ago. But, like, I watched you in the crowd with everyone, and there's a lot of young people in the crowd as well.
Yeah.
And just the songs. Like, you just write such great songs. I mean, they seem simple, but no one can do it like that. And they're actually really great songs, like the melodies.
Yeah.
You know, that's been part of the reason why
you've
been going for so long. Because it's about the fucking song.
But it's about being self-taught and not taking it any further.
and
stick to the E string. That's it.
Yes.
And if you ask me to play an AC/DC song right now and go, hey, come on, let's jam out to, I don't know, I wouldn't know, I can't do it. I wouldn't know how. I don't know where to put my fingers. I got no idea. No idea. So
I'm the same. Like, I learnt from a book and when it got too hard, I chucked the book away and just learnt bar chords, drop D. To this day, I'm like, key of what? I don't know, just tell me what is the fret. Like, so totally self-taught and you just make it up and that's sort of the joy and fun of it is you're just sort of discovering by yourself.
Yeah. I feel sorry for the parts on the guitar that don't get used much. I call them blanks. So I like to write songs with blanks in them because I feel sorry for them. Stay away from the dots and use a blank.
The sharps and flats.
Yeah, whatever that is. Yeah. It's like when Mudhoney was going really well in, it's just an offshoot story about keys and blanks or whatever.
Yeah.
Mudhoney's playing a show in, I think it was LA, and Duff McKagan, an old Seattle guy, jumps up, you know, a bass player from Roses. He jumps up and he straps on a bass and he walks over to Matt. And he goes, "Hey, Matt, what key is this in?" And Matt turns around to him and goes, "What's a key?"
I love it. Fucking yes. Yeah, it's too classically trained.
Oh, yeah, no, don't worry about that shit.
Yeah. A
couple of cans of beer. Well, that's my recording studio here. I just
I love it.
Play to myself.
And I love how there's a sticker over there. It just says two words, "Get fucked."
Yeah.
I love your recording studio. It's you know.
And it's rehearsal studio, because Mac is in Brisbane.
How does that go with him being? I guess you guys you're just a machine. You just know all the songs and you just jump
up. We get to a studio, Mac goes, "I've got a couple." I go, "I've got a couple." And then we just play it really quickly and we just go press the record button when we actually do record.
Oh, right.
So.
Where do you record?
We've done one album in this shed.
Far out. Which album?
I can't remember myself. Mountain of Piss, maybe. Was it Mountain of Peace, I think?
In this shed. So how did you go with the acoustics? Like, because you've got the insulation up in the roof here.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of metal in here.
Well, this is the whole thing. I didn't pack away any of my weights because I wanted it to be a heavy metal record. so Dean just set up over there. He set his drums up over there and I had two motorbikes parked there. So I was positioned between two motorbikes.
They're your baffles.
And that rained when we were doing vocals. It rained, so the squat rack there was so much rain on the roof. We put a doona over it and put a torch in there to do the vocals.
Brilliant.
We did one in the house. That was good fun.
Oh yeah.
But what about yourselves? You're doing what? Where do you record? When's the next thing?
Yes, thank you for asking. No, really excited because we're writing at the moment, and we never thought we'd do another record after Dean passed. We never thought we'd ever get back on the road. Mm. You know, so. Dean passed away in 2009 and that was it, right? It wasn't like we even went on hiatus. It was just like it's over. And then in 2018, remember Dodsey who ran the Barwon Club? Yeah. He was retiring and they were doing a gig for him at the Barwon Club to say, you know, thanks and see ya, we love ya. And they asked me to play solo because the Dirt wasn't around, I guess, and Dodsey loves Magic Dirt. Anyway, so it had my solo band on the bill of this private party. The whole of Geelong was there pretty much. But then for some reason something happened where someone was like, can Magic Dirt reform and just do a few songs for Dodsey? And we were like, fuck yeah, absolutely. So nobody knew that we were doing that except for whoever was organising it, and Dodsey was going to get the surprise of his life. So we hadn't played since 2009 and it was 2018.
Mm.
So we got up, played for Dodsey, and he was just like over the moon and everyone was fucking munted and it was a great night. And then after that night, we'd had offers from festivals and things that whole time that we weren't playing and we just said no. And then, we just got offers for festivals. We're like, let's do it. Let's get back. Get back. And you know, we love touring and stuff. And we felt right. We felt like Dean was, you know, giving us the green light. Because, you know, Dean was always supportive of what, even when he was still alive, of what would happen. He would always support whatever we decided. Yeah, so anyway, we got back on the road, but we didn't think about a new album till even years after we reunited in 2018. So it's very recent that we've thought about writing a new record. Mm. People kept asking us, you know, are you writing a new record? When are you going to get new songs? And we were like, nah. And then just kept sort of fermenting in our minds, you know, from people asking, and then just naturally we have that urge to write, I guess. And we've got new members in the band. It's a new dynamic, you know. Mm. So it's a bit of a fertile ground for that, I guess, and it feels right. So we started writing last year and actually we've recorded two or three songs already.
Cool. Where are you doing that?
So just in Melbourne. I reckon we'll just do it really sort of patchworky, just record here and there, and because, you know, it's not like the old days where you get a big fucking budget and you can just go wham, bam in the studio for, you know, 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's okay. I don't mind doing it.
Well, the technology's changed now.
Exactly.
I mean, we used to just go down to Birdland for a week, drink for 5 days, and then record for one, and Lindsay's going, fuck, and now you want me to mix it? It's like an old grumpy Lindsay. He was never good. He goes, oh, I'm not staying up all night working for you guys. I'm not going to do that. And then it'd be 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going, make the drums louder, you dickhead. And we're, oh, I'm not doing that. And we'd have these big shouting matches. He goes, oh, I'm not staying up late tomorrow.
But that's exactly what he does. He stays up. He doesn't get going till, midnight, and then he stays up till the sun comes up. We call him the bat.
Yeah, the bat. Yeah, we call him the count.
Yeah, the count. That's right. Yeah, we've both got that Birdland history. We've recorded that bird. He's our guy. We've recorded there so many times. Exactly the same. You get in there, you get munted for a few days, then you do a bit of work, and then Lindsay's got to put the whole fucking thing together. Our record, Young and Full of the Devil, was the most debauched studio experience I've ever had. Acid, bongs, booze. At one stage, I don't know how this happened. Remember Birdland with the gargoyle, the big birds and that balcony?
In Chapel Street there.
In Chapel Street. Somehow there was oranges involved and knives, and I just have a memory of chasing Lindsay with a knife and oranges and just going, just like just crazy shit. And Lindsay took us on a ghost walk up that back corridor where the toilet is.
And
he scared
the
fucking bejesus out of us with his story. And we were all tripping on acid and just like... But that was one of the craziest records we've done, really deep and dark, but just the studio. So the record was deep and dark, but us, we were complete clowns, just having a great time.
Well, we went there one time. We were going to rehearse in that studio, one of the last ones we did, because did you work in his newer one?
With the Barbarella
spaceship fucking thing.
Yeah.
But I remember turning up there one time. We got to band practice, and Robbie was all over the shop at that stage, but Bill was still in the band. Got outside the rehearsal studio, and we hadn't seen each other for ages. So I just parked my ute. And we went to the grog shop and we just all leaned against the bonnet of the ute and we drank half a slab. And we go, oh, fuck, do we really want to go and practice anything? We just went, nah. So we just loaded our stuff straight into Birdland, hit the piss. Then Lindsay goes, right, we're ready to record. And I go, we've got no songs. And he goes, what? He goes, we've got no fucking songs. So he goes, well, what am I supposed to do? And I said, put Stars on 45 on, like, boom, ch, boom, ch, boom, ch, boom, boom, ch, boom, ch, boom, ch. So he put that on the desk. And I just said, go and have a coffee, come back, and I'll write the riffs. So by the time he got back from the coffee, we had 10 riffs.
Oh, my God.
So, and when you listen to the album, you can kind of tell that that was written in 45 to 50 minutes.
That's fucking unbelievable.
That was very silly, actually.
Silly
but we number. Also did, we had a song called, I brought my old chainsaw down that used to run very rich on smoke. And I go, Lindsay, I need a chainsaw on this. I've got it. I've taken the exhaust pipe off and I'm going to rev it to the right tune. So different peaks to get the right key, whatever, the right blank or dot. So I'm playing around, wouldn't fucking start. So I'm out on the bloody balcony thing there. It's 2 o'clock in the morning in Chapel Street and it finally kicks in the guts. So I'm there fucking revving it away and then I go into the studio and there's smoke everywhere. So Lindsay was all like, oh, this is so cool, so cool. So I'm trying to listen to the riff and play the chainsaw in the same key. And of course, Lindsay is going, this is so cool, so cool, so cool. And I go, look, I think that we might have got it. And then he suddenly realised his studio is full of smoke and his mics and it was just everywhere. Or oily smoke. He cracked it. I think Robbie came to save the day because he'd actually slept underneath Lindsay's desk for 3 days. Robbie Rocket being the caveman that he was.
Fuck, man, that is such a great story.
If you're a bit like me and you want to say no to water, then be like me and always keep a slab of Heaps Normal in the fridge. It'll get you through those good times that are too good to be wasted. And when I'm on the dozer, Heaps Normal, non-alcoholic beers give me the same heavenly taste of beer when I just can't afford the hassle. I call them stunt beers because you get all the action without anyone doing a mischief to themselves. Heaps Normal, too good to be wasted. One thing we have got in common is is playing at the Barwon Club. Because I remember, and I reckon the first time I met Dodsey down there, for me was we played there on New Year's Eve, and I think there were seven people there. And he was just such a nice bloke, bringing us out cans and that kind of stuff. And out of the seven people there, I reckon four of them I invited, I worked with in Melbourne, they came down for the gig. So there's just no one there. But he was this dodgy, and I reckon it must have been he had just started as a venue, but I'd never met a happier publican.
He was the best. Like, yeah, he loved the bands. He looked after you. He was just like a mate. Like, you forgot sometimes that he was the actual boss of the whole fucking thing. And the Barn Club, the way it's set up, it's so classic. And to this day, it's exactly the same.
Yeah. So, I think they made the stage a little bit bigger at one stage. Remember the fucking small one where it was you couldn't move.
That's right.
You couldn't stand. You had to stand like that.
Yeah.
Everyone's guitar was hitting everyone else's guitar, and then the cymbals were hitting your back.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, no, they did. You're right. They made it a bit bigger.
Not much bigger, but
A little bit bigger, yeah. But just like the front pub, you know, it's very working class. You know, all the tradies will come in, families have their dinner, and then you go through a set of plain old doors and it's fucking CBGBs of Australia. It's like this punk rock haven of music and the melting pot and the genesis, you know, of so much music. And you know, Mudhoney went there, Dinosaur Jr. went there, so many international bands played there, and great Aussie bands like yourselves, Hard-Ons, Tumbleweed, you know, everyone.
But just the Geelong scene itself was big enough to support a venue, basically a venue like that, because so many good bands have come out of Geelong. It's just been...
Yeah.
We would explain to people in America about Geelong. They go, what's Geelong like? And we go, it's the Detroit of... Yeah. It's just there's a huge underground swell, and you've got to drive. Yeah, in those days, it was a good hour and a bit to get to Melbourne, the Victoria Road that unfortunately has taken a few out.
Yes.
But, but just this scene. And how can you get, I could never work out, how do you get such an industrial scene and such great punk rock out of a place that is like 15 minutes away from the most beautiful beaches in the world? It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's amazing how the Barn Club, it could have been any pub, like, I don't know how to explain it, but where it was positioned near the river, something in the ground, the land, where something's situated, I think has something to do with it. Then the person that runs it, Dodsy, you know, loves bands, and just everything came together. But, yeah, there were so many kids in Geelong that were playing music and in their lounge rooms, and then they'd go to the Barn Club and jump on the stage.
Mm.
But really great music, like you said, you know, we had Warped, She Freak, Bored, Amber Fear, Seaweed Gorillas, Poppin' Mamas, Dirty Lovers. Like, every night you'd go there and you'd see this incredible, like, raw as fuck, like, punk bands. I just remember when Bored used to play, it was the most badass shit I've ever seen. Like, Dave Thomas jumping off the stage and cracking his wrist wide open, and everyone just went mental. Just so many riots, but not where people wanted to hurt people. It was just like because of the sheer energy, you know, just high octane energy. And, you know, we'd go there underage as well, you know, sneak in, but no one would sort of really care. I felt, because I was pretty nerdy when I first started going to the Barn Club. I was at uni. I was wearing the Cardies, you know, before grunge kicked in, you know, Cardies, Op Shop stuff, you know, disposal store coats, glasses, stand up the front and watch, you know, Warped or Food or whoever, you know, Supergrass, not the English version, the Geelong version.
Yeah.
And that was where I found my people, you know, and just got initiated into it and then slowly morphed into this, you know, just wild thing, you know, cracked out of my Clark Kent kind of, you know. I was always going to end up there and, you know, end up there and then blossom from there and then go out into the world.
One thing I used to see there, but I've never seen it at any other club, that lights would always go out there because they had that flimsy light set up. There'd be someone getting crowd surfed and they'd kick the lights out of something. And I used to see it quite often. So by the time they got the lights back on, there would be a human pyramid because everyone was slamming and carrying on, but everyone was tripping over each other. And there used to be this, like a spaghetti bolognese of half-dressed people, and the lights would come on. They're going, oh, shit, here I am. And they'd all sort of untangle themselves until the next person kicked the lights out again. It was all stacks on the mill, but it's only ever happened there.
Yeah. And you know, the lights were just light switches.
Yeah.
On the side of the stage, there was that little fucking wooden box, and it had four light switches, and whoever was there would just go, yeah, I'll do the lights. I was one of them. Whoever just had a go.
Yeah.
And then you'd be drinking and forget you turn the lights off. Spaghetti bolognese.
Yep, unbelievable. Yeah, it's one place in the world.
Yeah, but yeah, Dodsy, I mean, the godfather of Geelong sort of rock, really. What a dude.
So, like, you said you never really wanted to be a musician or never obviously planned it or whatever. So, you mentioned about standing front and centre at the Barwon Club as a uni student, but is that sort of where it all morphed into, or what was the actual point of going, I think I'll pick this thing up and start playing it, or songs coming into your head, or?
Yeah. It's the weirdest thing, Ross, because I'd always done musical theatre and dance at school and Rock of Steadfords and all that sort of stuff, so had just loved being on stage. And uni I was doing dance and drama. But there was this one point and Greville Street was involved. So you're familiar with Greville Records at Greville Street, very famous strip. Well, it used to be, it's different now, but Greville Records is still there. Probably a lot of listeners know of Greville Records, I'm sure. Anyway, I was walking up the street with my mum one day, and I was at uni, whatever age I was, and there was a music shop there. I walked past and I saw an acoustic guitar, and I said to my mum, I just, out of the blue, whoosh, mum, can you buy me that guitar? Just out of nowhere. Never wanted a guitar, never learned a guitar, never thought about learning a guitar. And I became fixated on learning how to play guitar, just to learn how to play guitar for no reason. But I was writing poetry, and then one day I clicked and put the two together. I was like, I've learnt some chords. I've learnt, you know, three chords. Oh, now I can do a little progression, which I learnt from the book, and I'll put the words in front of me and I'll pair it with the music. And, you know, I never learnt covers, never was interested in songwriting. I just worked it out for myself, like I'd invented songwriting, you know. And then I met Dean. We were partners at the time going out, and he heard my cassettes because I'd record. He said, these are great. I'm going to learn bass. We're going to jam in my parents' motorcycle shed. We're going to start a band. And I went, okay, cool. And we just did it for the sheer joy of it, just learning how to play. And then, of course, the Barwon Club came into that matrix because we started going to the Barwon Club, seeing our friends play, and all our friends and everybody wanted to make a band because it was fun. So that's what we did. We started off as a three-piece called Dear Bubbles, which played my first songs, which were very poppy and very cute and very outsider music, like clunky but cute. And then we lost that drummer, and then we just jammed with Daniel, our first guitarist in Magic Dirt, in a little beach shack, got into the Stooges, MC5, local bands, and all this just swirled around and poof, and then out we popped, you know, into Magic Dirt. It all just sort of kept rolling ahead, you know, very much living in the moment. We were on the dole, we were kids, we were having fun, yada, yada, yada. And then it just, suddenly it's a career.
Mm.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So people think that, a lot of people assume that, you know, I'm standing with the tennis racket in front of the, yeah, I want to be a rock star. Like rock star is so opposite of how I think and how I operate. It's just not who I am, but that's the label that gets put on me. And I'm fine with that. That's cool, man. That's totally cool. I get it. But I am not. At all. I'm just a creative and I'm just doing shit and I'm reacting to the world and I love the world. There's so much beauty and I can't help but want to talk about it to you in a way that is not talking, but dance, drama, music, film, photography, all that stuff. I just want to tell you how beautiful the world is and how it affects me. You know, that's all I wanted to do. But I got to do it with mates.
Yeah.
Like you, you know, with mates, that's the thing.
Yeah, so there you go. I learnt to play guitar on a small pool cue and a tennis racket.
Oh.
And put Christmas tinsel around my shoulders and jam along to Slade.
Oh, so,
But it was beyond me until punk rock came out and I went, shit, if they can do it, I can. And then that was it. I bought a guitar and then went there. So I did all my glam rock stuff when I was about 12, turn the light, get the lights right, and you could see yourself in the reflection in the window, wearing my mum's high leather boots because Dave Hill had high boots.
Who's Dave Hill?
The Slade. Guitar players from Slade.
Slade, yeah. It's like, oh my God.
I want to be like Dave Hill. But then I didn't think about it anymore after that. Didn't give a stuff until punk rock came out and then just went, oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to be a punter. But then punters have to pay for their beer. Did you know that I really like beer? Well, I'm here to tell you about a bloody ripper of a Victorian beer called Bodriggy Brewing. And I bloody love them because they brew beers that taste like beer. It's beer so good, we're making a Cosmic Psychos draft with them. Available on tap at all good pubs. If your local doesn't have it, ask them why. Good on you, Bodriggy. So, you and Dean basically starting out from ground zero, like you got your poems matched with music and Dean goes, oh, yeah, I'll learn how to play the bass. What else was in that? Why did it just work so bloody well?
Well, it's a mystery to me, but I'll try and unpick it. Like, well, Dean and I got along very well and I think we were meant to find each other, like just one of those serendipitous meetings. And I think he saw something in me, like, because looking back, I realised that Dean, he has a sort of a producer mind, like he was very good at managing a band in that way. Like he had a vision, he was a visionary, and he just had an ability to steer our whole career because he loved music, but he had the mind for it. So I think he saw that potential in me and it made him really excited. And he just had to do something with it. So we got along really well. He was a skater and an engineer, like did air conditioning like for a company. So he was kind of all set in his life, but he loved music. And I think he even dabbled in bass playing before he met me. And then I became the sort of vehicle, this kind of like, wow, there's this person that's sort of talented and it's exciting. And, you know, so we were both like a power couple. These two powerful people that came together, you know, and then it got even more powerful. So this energy was huge. So we were sort of at the nucleus of whatever was going to happen around us, and it was just going to be, in retrospect, you could see it was just going to be successful. Mm. And he just always had my back. He just believed in me the whole time, and he thought I was special, you know, and what I had was special. Not just as a person who could write music, but he like we loved each other as people. He was my rock, you know, just really calm, stable, really nice person, really human, but just he was magical. He could just connect with people and he'd get things and he was smart but had that bit of wildness in him that could be that musician and understand the chaos and beauty of being a musician and being in that world. Mm. Just an incredible, a remarkable human, really. I can't say enough good stuff and I would be here for a long time still unpicking why it worked. But, yeah, there was just a spark and a magic, the X factor, the unknown thing that we were magnetised together and it just worked. It was really a miracle.
Yeah, and sometimes that's the only explanation you need. It worked.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just don't know why. As you said, it's some magical buddy.
Yeah.
The powers coming together and just,
it really is.
Amazing.
Yeah. You know, like, so losing Dean in 2009 was like, it's sort of unbelievable. You never think anything like that's ever going to happen. And especially like, it's not good anyone passing away, but Dean was 37, two girls, a wife, his band was like he'd worked so hard for so long. It made me so angry. It was like so unfair. Why? You know, to this day, yeah, there's just a gaping hole in my life where he's not in it. He's the one that I would ask, oh, what do I do now, Dean? Like when I have to make a decision about something in my career or something in my life, but you know, and he's not there to give me the answer. But, yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's just to this day, I can't compute it. It's just so weird.
Yeah, I knew he was crook and he wasn't travelling well, but when the news came, it was still a horrible shock.
Yeah.
A horrible shock. And one of the one of the saddest funerals I'd ever been to in my life. It was just the girls running around. It makes you wonder why.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit different. When the Psychos lost Robbie, we kind of knew it could have been on the cards at any time, but it still comes as a shock. And then you go, well, what the fuck? What are you supposed to do? Like, the immediate reaction was, we're done. Because I just, you know, missed his clown-like behaviour. Just a cute bloke and a great guitar player, but just missed him so much. And there's always, like, I still celebrate Robbie's life every year. And he's not far from here. He's just over in Castlemaine there, or Tooting. And I didn't realise how to I kind of handling it better now, and it took for me to lose my son to work out what. And one of the best bits of counselling, or the best thing that ever, that didn't really help much, but the grief is with you forever. Like, I'm sure you're going to grieve, Dean, every moment of your life. But it's about how you carry it. Instead of having it on your chest, you to put that grief on your back. So it's with you, but you're better off carrying it on your back because it makes you stronger and pulls you up. If you carry it on your front, you're stooped over. And that was really the most wonderful thing. It helped get me through, although, you know, it's still a load on the back. But losing any friend, you know, or family member, and you question yourself why.
Yeah.
And it goes on every fucking day all around the world, and you just think, fuck me, Dad. Everyone's going through that period every second of the day, somewhere in the world, losing someone who shouldn't go.
Yeah.
And no right to go. So much more to do, so much more to teach, learn, experience. Yeah, it's a real... It's a right bugger.
It is. That's so interesting what you said about the grief at the carrying it in the front, because that's how I feel. And maybe I should try and carry it on my back.
Yeah.
Because I've not really done that.
Yeah.
It
slides around every now and again. I still have my days.
Yeah.
But I just try and put it back on the back. Because then you go, I've got you. She's still here.
Yeah.
So you don't have to go... It's not off, but it's just, yeah, getting out of that. I just put it down to posture. I might have terrible posture anyway, but carrying that load there and it hurts your heart. I'd rather hurt my back, if you know what I mean. That makes any sense.
Gee, that's so cool that you got that bit of advice. Like, that is really life-changing.
Yeah.
Like, it really does settle in your chest. Like, it's...
Makes you crook.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's... Grief is a weird thing. It does... just takes on so many forms in your body and out there in your mind. It's such a weird thing.
And you think you have an experience for a day or two or something, and then it comes out of fucking nowhere. It's like it jumps out of a tree or jumps up in front of you, and you've got no warning.
No.
You're gone for all money. You can't walk around it.
No. So, no, you're right. Yeah. I don't want to go too deep, but it just the acute phase of it, it was just so weird. I felt like I was in quantum physics land. Like, I was like, what's going on here? Like, so many weird things happened around that time to everybody. And then, of course, it sort of settles after a while. But then weird things happen in little waves throughout the years. And I remember once even when we were on tour, we were in the van like a few years, this was when we reformed in 2018. We're on the road, we're like, is someone missing? Is everyone in the van? And we'd done that so many times on the tour where we hadn't asked that question, but it was this one particular day and we all went, we didn't have to say anything. Mm. It was just like, and you know, I'm with ghosts and stuff, I'm not like, I believe in ghosts, but I'm not like, I don't believe, like, I'm just like, okay, show me a ghost and then I'll believe in it. But I'm just like open to, because the universe is so fucked up, like it's so crazy. So I'm just like, anything can happen. So I'm open to it, but it felt very Twilight Zone, like, no. I was like, what's going on? So I don't know. This weird shit happens, but
yeah. There is weird shit. When the day after Robbie passed, we came back here and had a few beers, and Dean went home the next day, and I had to go drive into the vineyard, and I got my radio. I always listen to AM radio because I just love all the crackling and the sounds, like out here it sounds like you're on Mars or something. I just kind of really like it. And out of all this fuzz and weird noise came Elton John's Rocket Man for about 30 seconds to a minute. I'm going, what the fuck? You're saying I don't believe in much at all, but when that happened, I go, what are the fucking chances of that? It's like weird.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah, it's like the weirdest shit. And you're like, what? Like, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, but it's just very sad. It's very sad to lose someone. I mean, losing your kid too.
Any loved one. So
yeah, any loved one. Yeah, and you know, yeah, Dean was like family to me.
Oh, yeah, and yeah, such a part of your energy.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
everything.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
Oh, that's enough of that.
Yeah.
So, what are you up to now? Have a bit of a yarn about what you're up to.
Yeah, so I'm up to heaps. I'm always doing heaps of stuff. At the moment, I've got a project called Bleak Squad, which is myself, Marty Brown from Art of Fighting, Mick Harvey. We know Mick Harvey from Birthday Party, Nick Cave Bad Seeds, and Mick Turner from The Dirty Three. We've got a band together, us four. It was Marty's idea. He wanted to drum because he hadn't been drumming for a while, and he just called us all up, said, do you want to jam? Bring some scraps of songs in, we'll collaborate. We went, yeah, and got together, and it felt great, like really natural, fun, and we made a record, and we're releasing it on August 22nd.
Unreal.
So, yeah, we'll put the record out, we'll do some shows, and we'll see how it goes. Yeah. But, yeah, it's working really well, and as I mentioned, writing songs with The Dirt. We're kind of in the middle of that, and we would love to get it finished by the end of the year. And we're going to go out soon on some festival dates. We're supporting John Spencer in Perth. Yeah, we supported John Spencer and Beck back in 96, I think. So this is like 30-odd years later we get to support him again. And John Spencer is one of the best live bands I've ever seen, up there in my top five, I reckon. So that'll be great. And that's pretty much it. And then I'm always doing a million things, other things, you know, just tinkering away in the background on, you know, I'd love to put out a photography book. Like I've been taking photos for many years, like over two decades of photos worth, things I want to put out. Yeah, mainly just gearing up for the Magic Dirt's new record and taking Bleak Squad on the road. They're my two main focuses at the moment. Yeah, just doing the odd gig to bring money in and stuff like that, you know. Just lucky to be doing music, really, you know. And, yeah, just want to do, as I get older, I just want to try and do everything I'm dreaming of before I go, you know, and have fun.
It's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. But, and you know, I love nature as well, so I want to, I'm sort of trying to incorporate nature into my work. So the next maybe solo thing I do will be really nature-based somehow. Yeah, just as you get older, I think for me things become really sharply focused in a way where you're like, okay, I don't want to fuck around too much. I've got to just laser focus in on these things that I want to do and just get rid of all distractions kind of thing.
Focus is one thing I lack.
Oh, mate.
I walk out in the morning with one job to do. End up doing 20 that weren't planned and completely forget the important one I had to do.
Yeah.
But the best thing about living up here, it's just kind of, as my grandfather said and as my father said, what you can't do today, you just leave for the next generation. Just don't worry about it. So I'm fixing fences that my grandfather never fixed and the old man patched up with a bit of hay bale and some rusty wire and I'm like, oh, really? So, yeah, it never ends. It's great.
Yeah, no, I'm hearing you, that focus thing, yeah. I'm like that. I just get distracted so much. But
It's hard. I just said, if I come up with an idea, it seems to be followed by a heap of other ones and I can't remember what the original idea was. I can't quite channel everything into one straight line.
Yeah.
But then again, who knows where the straight line would go? You might have fallen off a bridge. So it's okay to go left or go right.
No, that's right, yeah. I like that randomness. It's like just, I don't know, like sometimes you feel like you have to be really productive and you have to do this in your day, but I love those days when you just let go and you're like a little dandelion, little spore in the wind and you're just going in the wind. Like I really enjoy those days, and I miss, not miss them, but I'd like to do be more like that, where you're just meandering.
Yeah.
Which is totally cool.
I like me. I don't know if this works for you, but if I'm meandering, yeah. Geez, I'm having trouble talking today. No, must be this bloody
heaps normal.
Heaps normal. Yeah. If I meander, I'm more likely to trip over a good idea. So I think is better than going, I'm going to sit here until I come up with something good. But if you meander, that's how I think the best ideas for me come.
Absolutely. And having that time to do that, because I live in the city, and sometimes I get a bit caught up in the rhythm of living in such an urban environment. So you really have to try and tap into not being in that rushy city thing. Yeah, you have to sort of cultivate it.
Oh, yeah. A day in town or a couple of days in town for me is enough. I can't wait to get the hell out.
Yeah.
But having said that, you end up going out and playing in towns and cities and stuff, and it's all fine.
Yeah.
I guess. What do you reckon I'd take you for a walk around the farm?
Yeah, that sounds great. Right. I'd love that. Thanks, Ross.
All right, mate.
Love you, mate.
Love you too.
Yay. Mm-mm. So good we've still got the fucking cosmic sight.
So there you have it. Just a couple of mates who have known each other for years, talking about the things that matter, music, family and friends. Thanks, Adelita, for coming up and paying me a visit. It was great to see you, and I hope we can do it again soon. You should go check out the work Adelita is doing with Bleak Squad, the supergroup featuring Mick Harvey, Mick Turner and Marty Brown. It's bloody fantastic. And can you believe that Magic Dirt are celebrating 25 years since that absolute ripper track Dirty Jeans was released? I can't believe it's been that long. They're heading out on tour in Adelaide, Sydney, Newcastle and all over Victoria. Jump on the internet machine and check out dates at magicdirt.com. How You Going is produced by Sam Loy with Mark Weston as the executive producer. It's proudly supported by Heaps Normal and Bod Riggy Brewing, the best brewskis going around. Come back for the next episode of How You Going. Well, I'll be having a chat with me good mate, Macca, from the Cosmic Psychos. Here's a sneaky look.
I don't know whether it's work or not, but I don't give a shit. We're doing a lot of times 18-hour days, but who cares?
Well, an 18-hour day is all right if you have a couple of beers for breakfast. It's sort of It settles it out a little bit. Not that we do it every day.
Yeah, but no, it's fun.
And remember, the Cosmic Psychos are kicking off a tour right now as we try and flog our new album, I Really Like Beer. So check out cosmicpsychos.com.au for all the drip tray details. All right, I've got to get out of here. See you soon.
How you going, yeah?